Have you been watching a lot of TV this week?
I guess I've been watching roughly the same amount of TV, just different TV, I guess.
I've been watching TV in strange places. I'll say that as much. But before we get to finally, we have the launch of Apple TV Plus, Apple's video service that they've released after months and months and even years of reporting on, like, this is a show that they backed and this is what they're building out. Let's talk about a few other things before that. HomePod, AirPods Pro, have experience with those now, and the new iOS 13.3 beta. So first off with HomePod, I read a thing today that was sort of like a re-review in 2019 of what the HomePod is like, because when it first launched, was it 2017 February?
It'd have been
2018.
18 February, yeah.
18. Okay, so it's like, you know, it's approaching 2 years in this coming of February, so it's not quite two yet. But my original review is like summary is like it has potential. It's missing some very obvious features that other smart home speakers have. If you're deep in the Apple ecosystem like I am, you can still get value out of it, but we don't know how soon new features will come to it. And then at the end of last year, I did sort of a year looking back, like when they've done new features for HomePod. And the takeaway there was, even though they're updating it slowly, like it's taking a long time, and they don't give any sort of a roadmap for this, so they could consider it done and never change it again, and they're still missing features. And as of, you know, really like this month, they've kind of nailed down all the basic things that you would expect to be there on day one, like multi-user support for a speaker with Home in its name. So for the first time, like you can sort of recommend HomePod without qualifications, aside from the price, that it's even at $300, it's very expensive. That it's probably more speaker than a lot of people need, especially when you start adding more speakers at the home. But that's also made different by the fact that there are now like holiday sales happening before Christmas, where the HomePod brand new gets prices that are really like they're $199 for new in the box. And that's been my price point where if I'm buying one used or on sale, I want it to be at least $199 or under. And now that there are brand new ones being sold for that, like Best Buy did an early Black Friday sale that will go away maybe within a day or two. I don't know, but then be back by Black Friday, and then other retailers will probably match that. That changes things. So today I wrote a piece that's mainly about these are all the things that HomePod can do now. Like that review a year and a half ago has lost some relevance. And the same thing for the re-review a year ago, that now, like, look at all the things you can do with the HomePod. And it's not just missing features, like, it's more creative things too, like handoff where you can take a phone call or a podcast or music and then just like wave your phone nearby and have it pick up on the HomePod. Like, we didn't consider that a missing feature. It's a cool feature to have.
Yeah, that's like the feature innovation, not just like catch up.
Exactly, yeah. And so I felt pretty strongly that if the HomePod can do a lot of what you want it to do at $200, it's really easy to recommend compared to $300 or $350 when it first launched, right?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that when we covered the HomePod originally back in 2018 when it was around, we were, you know, one of the very few
podcasts,
yeah, podcasts, whatever you want to call it, that were, you know, positive on the HomePod overall and not just like saying this thing's a joke. But we admitted it was too expensive for what it offered and it needed to fill out the feature set. And I'm pretty sure at the time we were talking about like $250 price point range.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously now you see the HomePod eclipse that when it's on sale, but Apple itself haven't quite got there yet on, you know, new out of the box pricing. It's $299, not $250.
Yeah. Like, and if they did a HomePod mini, like what would you expect to be priced? Because I've mentioned on the show recently with buying a new home that I want to have more HomePods in the home. Right now I have three total, a stereo pair and then a single HomePod somewhere else. And I've got AirPlay 2 speakers in different rooms, and that's great for saying like Siri play music everywhere or play this podcast everywhere, but it's not great for anything for playback beyond like using your phone or iPad to send the audio to that speaker. And for the kids, like in their rooms, it's especially important that they can use voice. They can use the iPhone and iPad. You know, they've got iPods and iPads. But it's not something they would do as much as use voice control. So ideally, I would put something in their room, and the HomePod as it is kind of more than what I need for that. But when I imagine a HomePod mini, I'm thinking like 200, 150, no less than that. Like I can't imagine a $100 solution like product from Apple.
It should probably be $99.
Yeah, right.
It'll probably be priced at 150.
Right, yeah.
Because I think 199 is too close to the big HomePod. But if you had a 150, 250 kind of product line, mm-hmm. that feels distinguished enough for each of them, and it seems like pricing that Apple would actually go with.
Yeah.
They're not going to do the $30 Echo Dot stuff. They're just not going to do that.
Yeah. Do we have a sense of how much
it costs? It'd be nicer for them to do it, maybe, yeah. perhaps. It's just not in their nature.
Yeah. Do we have a sense of what it costs to make the HomePod for Apple? Like, you know, where they break even or lose money on these things?
I'm pretty sure they make money on it.
Yeah.
Like the bill of materials is like 180, I think.
Okay.
But that was when it was new, so yeah. you've got to do some discounting.
Surely by now, right?
Yeah, so it was what? It was $350. It's $350 when it was released, and the build of material was like $180, so then you have to add on, you know, marketing, distribution, shipping, all those costs. So it was probably costing them like $240 and they sold it for $350, right? Mm-hmm. So there's like a 35% profit margin, which is within their normal range. So now if you took it to $250, you'd imagine it's like around the 150 mark, all, you know, like the 175 mark all in, that kind of range. Mm-hmm. So I think they could take it to 250 and be fine. Like, and you have to remember, they're still not really supporting third-party music services. So for every HomePod sold, it's also a very big play towards an Apple Music subscription being right. going as well.
Yeah, and so retailers probably, like when they sell these things for $200, surely they're not buying them from Apple at a super low rate. And so they might use that as like a reason to get you in the store. And so they might.
Yeah, or it might be like break even pricing and that. But like the wholesale pricing may be around that level mm-hmm. or whatever. And some of the HomePod discounts are like open box, so they couldn't sell them at full price anyway. But it definitely seems feasible that the HomePod as we know it today could be $250 without a problem, maybe even $200. But at that point, Apple wouldn't do it because that's not their. They wouldn't get their profit margin. They could probably sell it at $200 and break even on it all in, but it wouldn't be their thing. If they could sell it at $250, I feel like they'd be happy with it. And then if you look, you know, down the market range, it seems like $150 would be kind of a natural place for a HomePod Mini to lie, because we assume the Mini is still going to be music centric in terms of sounding good,
mm-hmm.
and it's not just going to be a, you know, a little disc, a little puck that is just a Siri client.
Yeah. You know, for a while, I know it's different in the UK, which retailers you have, but of course there's the Apple Store, and Apple's online store. Amazon, they don't do HomePods, they do accessories, but even though they have got Apple's official store stuff there, I guess it's too close to the Echo. They don't want to deal with that. I guess that's the logic there. But for a while, you know, Best Buy has HomePods, Walmart, Target didn't for a long time, and it was weird. Like they had like this fire sale that was unrelated to a holiday promotion, and then they didn't have stock anymore. And it seemed like they just didn't care about selling the HomePod, even though they sell everything else from Apple, except for Macs, I guess. But
HomePod is definitely a low volume product on Apple scale.
I just checked again, and Target does have it for $300, so maybe they'll get involved in that $200 price stuff, because I know that like one of the iPad deals that Best Buy has today will be on Target tomorrow. So definitely, like if this is on your gift list for yourself or somebody else, part of what I wrote is that at launch, you know, well, there were missing features at launch, including like stereo support, even though it was pre-announced. But once you could buy a HomePod and pair it with another HomePod for a stereo setup, that was $700, right? Because it was $350 for each one.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can do stereo for $400 because it's $200 for each one when you've got a holiday sale like this. So that matched with the fact that there are so many more features now that you can use, like a couple that we'll talk about in a moment, that it's way more compelling without even changing the actual product, like the hardware itself. So,
And it still feels like there's runway. They could just carry on selling the HomePod as is for, you know, the foreseeable future and just continue with more and more software updates for it.
Yeah, because it's got the A8 chip, and you think about...
But it doesn't have to drive a screen or any of that stuff.
Yeah, you think about what Apple does with the chips inside of the AirPods, you know, and mm-hmm. I don't know what they, like what they're close to in terms of the A-line chips, but presumably the A8 is like overpowered for what a speaker needs, and so yeah. they can do a lot there.
Especially so much of the Siri stuff is just relaying an answer that you got from the server, right? Like mm-hmm. it's not doing heavy computation. It's just you ask it something, it processes it and sends it off. It gets a response back and tells you what it is. Like it's a very, you don't need latest and greatest chips to be able to do that.
Yeah. One of the funny things about HomePod and Best Buy I want to mention is that when you search for HomePod on Best Buy's website, the top suggestion below HomePod is HomePod 2. So people must be searching for that, and they want that. I saw that myself, and I didn't think much about it, but over the weekend, I was staying with my grandparents-in-law, and my grandmother-in-law has recently lost her vision almost entirely, and so using her iPhone to answer a phone call has been really difficult with before the phone call's over. And so one of the things I recommended was try out the HomePod. And so we did, and it worked out awesome. Like it was terrific. And just one of those things where at launch, you couldn't place a phone call with the HomePod. You could answer, right? But you couldn't say Siri, call whoever. So
you couldn't answer either.
Oh, okay.
It was useless.
Yeah.
One of the dumb things. It was like, obviously.
You could transfer a call from your phone.
You'd have to manually tap it on your phone, yeah, to do it.
Yeah, so now you can make and receive phone calls there. But you say Siri, answer the call. And so that worked out. But my grandfather-in-law asked, what is the HomePod 2? Because he was searching for Best Buy HomePod. You know, and he was like, there's a 2 out now. And I'm like, no, I think people just want there to be a 2 out. But let's talk about some of the new features that last week were new, but we didn't have time to really experiment with. The first is the multi-user feature, where now you can add multiple profiles to your HomePod, like voice profiles. And I think it's got a pretty bad reputation at the start because, at least in the initial software update, what was it, 13.2, it seemed like setup was very bad and reliability wasn't all there. And then there was the 13.2.1 update for HomePod. And that's the only time that I got to experience was way after that update was out. And so I think for both of us, the delay in part of testing it was that even though we can try it, we need other people in the family to also try it. So
yeah.
For me, it took – I think I asked Siri on the HomePod to play my favorites mix, and it interrupted me for the first time to say, who is this? And then I said, Zach, and then it played my favorites mix. And then now, every time there's something like that, that's a personal request like that, where it needs to know who I am, it will acknowledge me by Zach each time, like playing your favorites mix, Zach. And that's a way to say, like, I'm not mistaking you for other people in the home. And it kind of has a nice effect on it because it makes the HomePod feel more personal. Like the phone can always do that, but HomePod needed to assume that you could be anybody, even though it was just tied to your phone account, you know, your Apple Music account, your messages and contacts and everything. But I did get a chance to actually try this in the home without just myself. So after I realized that it worked for me without me doing like any fiddling around with it, I asked my wife to try it out too. And I said, ask the HomePod to play your favorites mix just using your voice. Like, don't say anything about who you are. And she did, and the HomePod recognized that was a different voice than mine. It said, you know, who's this? And she said, Kelsey. And then now it works for her. And we haven't tried beyond that, like sending a text message or using reminders to see, like, does it actually use the correct phone? But I presume because it's getting the favorites mixed down, which is like the personalized Apple Music playlist of recommendations, that the other stuff works too.
Yeah, and it's obviously meant to do that.
So. Yeah. Yeah, which is really cool because, I mean, before that, the HomePod has always been, you know, we can have it in every room, including like the kids' rooms. But if they say send a message or make a phone call, it's going to use my phone. And if my phone's home, it will work. You know, it will only not work if my phone isn't home. So, and the only alternative to that was turning off the ability for even you to do those things that are personal, you know, that are like classified as personal request. So this is one of those features where it's like that should have been there at launch. It took a long time to get there, longer than multiple timers and calendar support and everything. longer than iOS 13.
That was the biggest like bullet point against it compared to Alexa and Amazon and Google Home competition, mm-hmm. was just that it didn't understand multiple voices. So as a shared device, it was limited in that way.
Yep. And in your home, you're having a better experience with people in your family being able to use the HomePod just in general.
Yeah. So I have two HomePods and a stereo pair in my office. And that was obviously motivated by the last 2 years where it made most sense as a personal product, realistically. So that's how I've been doing it. Now that the multi-user stuff is out, the question of getting a third HomePod for the house and everyone to use is definitely coming around. And I'm kind of waiting to see if there are any holiday sales and stuff in the UK, because unfortunately we didn't have the $1.99 Best Buy offer.
You guys got a Dixon's, is that what it's called?
Yeah, there is Dixon's.
Where John Brower came from for Apple Retail and then was fired.
They are authorized resellers, but they're not as hot on the ball and discount. We'll have to see how it plays out. But I'm definitely in the market again now for now multiple users are here, we could actually do it. So I'm definitely looking at it. But for the time being, at the moment, I don't have multiple users turned on. It's still in my office. But something that's really been like a red flag for even doing it before was my sister has a speech impediment, like mm-hmm. a learning disability. So she can't pronounce words perfectly. Mm-hmm. And what I'd find is the HomePod wouldn't ever pick up her saying the trigger phrase, so hello Siri. It just wouldn't be able to reliably catch the trigger. When it actually, if you like manually hold it down, or if I said hello Siri and then she said the command, the dictation on that side was generally okay, but for whatever reason the algorithm that determined that someone's actually speaking to it and it should start listening, the way she pronounced Siri, it just didn't get it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's fluke or if it's like a change to the algorithm, but as of updating to 13.2, she can now say and talk to it, and it responds to it every single time.
Yeah, and so, it makes sense that they would change how that works. They tune it up when they also change to recognize voices.
Yes, so it feels like a bit more than coincidence, because there are related features to voice detection.
Mm-hmm.
It could just be a fluke, but I'm very happy now, because it means that actually, you know, another member of the family can reliably use it, whereas before she just couldn't, and yeah. I'd have to like activate it on her behalf, and then she'd say, "Oh, let's play something and dance around or whatever."
Yeah. So my son Rory is 2, and he's not quite at the age yet where he could talk to Siri reliably. But my daughter Emily is 6, and she can, and so I haven't tried to do multiple voices stuff with her yet, but it's something I do want to try this week and see, because she's got Apple Music through family sharing, and so she has her favorites like JoJo Siwa and Taylor Swift, so those things should be, if it can distinguish her voice from her mom's voice and my voice, then that would be neat, and I think it would work in theory, so that'll be the next test for me, is that. And one more thing about the Best Buy experience from my grandparents-in-law, they have a house full of the Alexa products, the Echo speakers, mostly from like buying Ring doorbells and getting stuff for free like that. But they wanted the HomePod based on my recommendation because of the better integration with the iPhone and Siri and like specifically answering the phone, when the iPhone rings. And the person at Best Buy, like when they went to buy it, they were like, why do you want that? Like, there's just because HomePod has a recommendation, like the reputation of being overpriced, like the worst smart speaker,
and underspecced, yeah.
Yeah, underspecced. And so the salesperson, like, was probably trying to like kind of give them like a course correction there.
Even today, it's not terrible advice to recommend other products in the category.
Sure. Yeah. And so to ask why, but what he didn't know is that they have an Echo in every room and smart lights and everything, not even related to me, but just like on their own accord. But I thought that was something. The other feature, handoff is one that is not a missing feature, but like you said, starting to innovate with what you can do in this space. Because as far as I know, there's no version of handoff for the Google stuff and the Amazon stuff. And that's the feature where you're playing music or a podcast or you're on a phone call with your iPhone and you get home and you want to resume that on the HomePod. And all you have to do is just put the iPhone near the HomePod, like just kind of wave it really quickly. I think at first you have to confirm, but after that it's instant that it just does the transfer for you. And my experience with that from the start has been very good. I think yours took some time, like maybe through the update. But
yeah, ever since 13.3.
Uh-huh. Oh, on the iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah, on the iPhone. Then it started working.
Funny.
And it really is like really, really good.
Yeah.
It's really fast. You just hold it near. It's almost like you're scanning an NFC tag, but you're not. It works based on like Bluetooth range. It's mm-hmm. kind of like how they do the Apple Watch unlock on the Mac, where mm-hmm. it knows roughly the time of flight, how long it took to get there. And obviously yeah. on the Mac, they use that for security. So it knows you're near the laptop to unlock it. And on the iPhone, it's obviously just a feature. It's like, we know you're nearby. We'll switch it over. And then if the music's playing on the HomePod, you can just bring your iPhone nearby again and it goes back in the other direction. And it's just a really, really quick way of setting up the AirPlay output in either direction. Whereas before, you'd have to tap on the phone, open Control Center, press the little three-dot button, scroll down, tap, wait, you know, like the whole thing. Now you just go beep and you just move on. And it's really, really nice.
Yeah. It was nice that you could do those things before, but with handoff making it instant, like I when we moved, I knew the feature was coming. It wasn't out yet, but I purposely located the HomePod in the living room on like kind of the bookcase that we have when you first walk in to be like, you know, like arm level, so that you can very conveniently lay your phone, you know, wave it and lay it down right there, and then you've transferred, you know, whatever you're listening to or the phone call.
Yeah, and based on how it was described, ignoring the bit where it didn't work for me at all.
Yeah,
as soon as it started working, it was faster and cooler than what I'd imagined it would be.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I just assumed it would be a lot slower for whatever reason, but it's really, really quick. It's like you hold it, you get a little vibration on your phone. 1 second later, the HomePod's playing music.
Yeah,
and the same if you're going back back in the other direction.
Yeah, you've managed your expectations and has exceeded those. That's mm-hmm, good,
indeed.
I mean, you get a really pleasant like tap back with haptic feedback on the iPhone too. It's like lets you know, and there's also like a notification, but you can ignore that. The real feedback is that it worked, you know. What I've experienced, I believe this is related, but by doing handoff from the iPhone to the HomePod for a podcast playing, to then pause the podcast, walk out to the car, and resume playing on the iPhone, like the sync was perfect. Where, especially when the HomePod was brand new, I was stoked to have podcast playback like natively without AirPlay. But sync was awful, so I didn't recommend using it. Handoff fixes that because doesn't seem to be like let the cloud catch up with where you are. Let your progress sync. It's like this is what you take, you know, this timestamp, and then it seems to work the other way around pretty well too. So yeah, really happy with that and kind of HomePod growing up. It's taken way too long, longer than it should, but it's getting there.
This episode of Happy Hour is brought to you by OWC, Otherworld Computing, one of our favorite manufacturers of SSDs, Thunderbolt external drives, PC and Mac docking solutions, performance upgrade kits, and more. As 9to5 Mac's deal of the month, OWC is offering 9to5 Mac readers two great deals on its popular USB-C docks. The OWC USB-C travel dock is a 5-port travel dock with up to 60 watts of power pass-through and small enough to fit in your pocket. It includes two USB 3.1 ports, a USB-C port with power pass-through, SD card reader, HDMI, with support for 4K displays. We also have a deal on the OWC 10-port USB-C dock that has five USB 3.1 Gen 1 ports, including USB Type-C, and can charge laptops with up to 60 watts of power. You'll also find Gigabit Ethernet, a front-facing SD card reader, mini display port, combo audio in and out, and a mini display port to HDMI 4K adapter is included. Now, I've been using an OWC Thunderbolt dock since the 2016 MacBook Pro came out, and I absolutely love it. I sit down at my desk, plug in one cable, immediately connecting to power, my external display, Ethernet, my Time Machine drive, external keyboard and mouse, and whatever else I need to plug in to a pinch is right there on the dock. These USB-C docks provide the exact same single-port convenience. Both the 5-port and the 10-port docks on offer come in four color options: silver, space gray, gold, and rose gold to match your MacBook. Check the show notes or go to macsales.com for up to 15% off with code 9to5DOCK. That's number 9, T-O, number 5, D-O-C-K, 9to5DOCK. Thanks again to OWC for sponsoring Happy Hour.
All right, man, the next thing I want to talk about is my hands-on experience with AirPods Pro now, because when we last recorded, they were out for delivery, but I didn't have them yet. And so since then, I've gotten to use the heck out of them. and just to recap, you don't like in-ear earphones, so you're not
in general.
In general.
It may be true that the vent design of the new Pros are better for me or whatever, but I'm just going to ride out the current AirPods that I've got, second gen, and then when they die eventually, maybe then I'll reconsider getting a try on of, you know, the in-ear stuff and see what happens. But I'm not in like a rush to change it out, really.
Yeah, I kind of think that the vent stuff, you wouldn't notice that it's the transparency stuff that you do notice the most. I've seen mm-hmm. people say otherwise, but in my experience, being able to hear what's around you feels good. And if you use noise cancellation,
yeah, but I get that for free when I'm on the current AirPods.
Yeah, exactly. So I think in that case, and even still, like, it's kind of directional. So if something further away from you, you're not going to hear it. So I think that's the correct thing for you. For me, my test experience with these is coincided with a planned trip to Disney World and running a half marathon race at Disney World. And that's a pretty good test for how I use AirPods, you know, walking out and about and being around a lot of people and also, like, you know, running for a few hours. So, you know, aside from that, like, there's the ear tip test experience, which is that you put them in, they come with medium tips by default, and you can remove those in replace them with smaller or larger tips. And they're kind of weird to remove, but, like, once you do it, it works. And I was pleased that, like, if you replace the medium with larger, then you can put the medium tips in the little container where the larger one was, and it clips in correctly, and then you can store them safely together. What I wanted to comment on with the ear tip test is that I guess what it does is it plays music, which I think is Tyco, and then. You listen to that, and it lets you know if there's enough isolation, or if you need larger tips. But I didn't get the sense that if you used tip that was like I use medium, and it passed the test. It said this is a good fit. But in running, I found that I was still adjusting the tips a few times to, like, get the sound that I wanted. That I probably needed larger tips for that. And I wouldn't be adjusting the, you know, like, pushing them in as much. And so then I did the larger tips once I got back home from the race experience, and then they passed the fit test. And I haven't tried small, but I think with small, like, maybe that would trigger this isn't a good fit in the tip fit test. But that's kind of my experience, though, is that you may pass the test with that feature, but it might not tell you what is actually the best size. So, you
know. Yeah, because obviously it can only use data from a single microphone that's on the inside of the earbud,
yeah.
Right? So it can only go so far, and even if it can nail the isolation ratio, uh-huh. it's still not going to have any clue about comfort. Like, yeah. You could put a microphone on the second gen AirPods, and they could tell you if your ear's covering the hole, but it wouldn't be able to tell you if they feel nice in your ear. So it's a nice to have, but I think it's telling that the ear tip fit test is not a prominent part of the setup experience.
Sure.
Right? Like, yeah. in the intro cards, it tells you about noise cancellation, it tells you about the new force sensor button. It doesn't tell you to do the ear tip fit test. That's, like, buried in the Bluetooth settings. And the reality is you should probably just try all three sizes anyway, just to check.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not hard to just switch between. And even if you open the box and try out medium, which is the default, and they feel okay, then it's not gonna, you know, waste your time to try small and large and then compare the differences. Then you've got a better idea. I mean, the idea of that feature was nice, because, like, with Power Beats Pro, they come with different tip sizes, and you've got to just experience it to know what's best for you. And I was like, you know, I think the appeal for both of us in theory was this will eliminate sort of the frustration you get from choices, but still worth trying them out yourself and not relying on that feature alone. Also, I found that the default controls, as always, you know, it's worth experimenting with changing the default controls, because what they give you out of the box is that when you squeeze one side, you toggle between noise cancellation on or off, and when you squeeze the other side, it's transparency on or off. and you can customize it to be transparency on or noise cancellation on or off. Like, you know, you've got all three in one. And then the other option is to, when you squeeze, activate Siri. And you've got the Hey and Siri feature that will activate Siri with your voice. But if your mileage varies with that and it's not great, then having a, you know, a squeeze control for Siri can be very useful. So at the very least, I knew that I wanted to assign Siri to one of them. And so on the other one, I had, you know, I wanted to combine noise cancellation and transparency. And just with like using them, I decided that the 30 minutes extra battery life you get with having off, you know, using that, I just wasn't using off as a mode ever, because, you know, you don't get the benefits of noise cancellation, and then they don't sound as good as even transparency, because you're still getting like sound isolation, but it's that uncomfortable feeling of like, I can't hear things around me without like total silence. And so I just changed one side to be noise cancellation or transparency, and then not have that third toggle for off in there. And you can, you know, obviously adjust that on the iPhone or the Apple Watch or whatever you're using. But I found that to be cool.
And the actual force sensor long press gesture can be either the noise cancellation modes or Hello Siri activation, right?
Yeah, you get those two options, and you don't get anything else. And I mean, you get one click for play or pause, like depending on what you're doing. You get double click for skipping ahead and triple click for skipping back a track. And I was thinking, like, well, how have they managed to do this versus like regular HomePods with a tap? And I guess with HomePods, there's what do you get? You get one tap. Is one tap a thing on HomePod or AirPods? Excuse me.
On AirPods, no, it's only double tap gestures.
Yeah, and the double tap is to, you know, to measure intent, that you're definitely tapping them for this reason and not just to, you know, an accident, I guess. And so by having double tap as like the baseline, then you can go up a level by triple tap, but they never went to quadruple tap as like a thing, because it's just too much tapping.
No, the AirPods don't have triple tap.
They don't have triple tap.
No, AirPods are double tap only. So you can choose different actions for either ear, right? But it's only ever activated by double tapping.
Oh, okay. So
you get play and pause, you get Siri, and then you get next track or previous track, and you can just choose left or right for both of those options.
Yeah. Clearly it's been a while since I tried customizing. So,
well, I think the reality is most people don't use the double tap that much.
Yeah.
Because it's just too annoying. It's like frustrating, and transitioning to this, you know, force sensor, which is essentially just a button that's really, really small, because they couldn't fit like a full button on those little stems, is a much better solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I spent time customizing mine, and I think the thing that I did was just, I think one side went forward, one side went backward in the song. But I do like the, I like that you can do one click, two clicks, three clicks to do things. I'm not quite satisfied with the options you get with the press and hold, because I need one to be switching between noise cancellation and transparency. I only did the other one as Siri just because there was no value in like having the same mode on either side. But with the Siri stuff, I could also like squeeze my phone in my pocket, like the side button, or the digital crown on my watch, and that's also like clicking and holding a button. So it's not that different. Or use
all the voice command.
Yeah, or use hand Siri. So what I have found, you know, being someone who used Powerbeats Pro for a while since their release earlier this year, is getting, I've gotten accustomed to having volume control on the, you know, on the as buttons on each one. And during the race, I even experienced that, where switching modes was one thing I wanted to do, but I also wanted to change volume, and I would, you know, launch the, or like, you know, raise my wrist on the screen and, you know, swipe over from the workout screen to the now playing screen and like spin the crown to adjust the volume. But I my instinct would be like, pinch my fingers and click something, you know, and it's because it's what I've been doing. And so for that reason, I don't know how realistic it is, but I could see mapping one side to be like press and hold to increase the volume a step, you know, and you do it a few times and you get it where you want. And then the other side could be decrease, and you have the same option to map it. And, you know, just that as an option, I would like, because I don't feel like I'm getting enough value out of what you can do with the long press now. But yeah, I don't know. I like it as it is, but that's one thing I think could improve. And it's just like if you went back to AirPods, you'd have the same experience where you get used to having volume control and you use it to not having volume control. And it's quickly one of the things that you notice with AirPods, whether they're the regular ones or pros.
Yeah.
And then with the run experience, I mean, it was a totally fine. Like I saw a few years ago when I started doing these races, I at first you wouldn't see AirPods, and I think I mentioned on the podcast at the time, but it was rare to see AirPods, mostly because they were hard to come by. Around last year, AirPods were everywhere, and so a lot of people had them. This year I was looking to see who had pros, and I know of one other person who had them that I didn't see beside myself, and then I saw one other person in my sort of corral group of runners that had AirPods Pro, and that was within 5 days of them being released, so it was kind of impressive. Also, I saw a lot of Powerbeats Pro, both in black and the ivory color, which they must have had to wait for a while to get those. So it's a neat thing to see, and I'm sure that there are actually more AirPods Pro in the crowd because there were like 12,000 people in total, and I couldn't see everybody. But
and was it like better fit, more comfortable to have the in-ear designs versus the old AirPods?
I mean, for the run. It's such a tough compare to Powerbeats Pro for me, because with Powerbeats Pro you get the buttons for volume and you get 9 hours of battery, so like you don't need to charge them in your charging case, you know, if you go from like that run to something else without going back to a charger. You know, and like sound wise I don't think it was quite as good, but it was good enough. And I did find value in switching between noise cancellation for times where I didn't care about hearing around me, and then transparency for when I wanted to hear like the race start, people around me, the finish line when they announce your name, you know, those kind of things. And then through each of the water stations, so I can say thank you to the person giving me water or Powerade. But it's tough. Like the reason I think I'll stick with these for every day is because they fit in your pocket with the case. Versus, you know, Powerbeats Pro, where they don't. And even though you get 9 hours with Powerbeats Pro, they're pretty prone to activating on their own because the sensor gets covered up and it thinks that you're using them. So, I definitely can say that I don't see for myself use in keeping the second generation AirPods around is like also a thing. There's no situation that I think that I need those instead of the AirPods Pro.
Okay.
And for the race, because the case is so small, I did fit the pocket for the AirPods in my cup. It had like a little pocket on it, you know? And so I had like my key fob in there and I had the AirPods charging case in there. And the reason for that was I thought, you know, if these do die during the race, I don't want to run without music. And so I can just put them in there for a few minutes and then have enough battery to get through. But in reality, having them 100% at the start of the race, they lasted. It was like 2.5 hours when I checked the battery and they were at 38%. So they had a good ways to go. And that's with using, you know, the features that only give you up to 4.5 hours. So they worked out great.
ExpressVPN is a simple and reliable way to make sure that your network traffic is secure wherever you are without noticeable impact on your internet speed. Public Wi-Fi security measures are always under attack, with unscrupulous actors looking to steal your sensitive, private information wherever and however they can. Take back your privacy with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address so no one can see what you're doing. To enable ExpressVPN, it just takes one click. Download the app, click to connect, and instantly 100% of your network data is secured. ExpressVPN actually invented technology called Trusted Server to make sure that no one can keep logs of what you're doing online, including them. Their VPN servers run off of RAM, which means no logging is stored to permanent disk storage. It is easy to use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, and tablet. One subscription applies to every device you own, from Macs, iPhones, iPads, even Android phones, home routers, and other devices too. Use ExpressVPN to surf public Wi-Fi without fear of being snooped on and keep your personal data private. ExpressVPN has 24/7 human support to help you get up and running, and they're recommended as the number one VPN provider from sites like CNET and TechRadar. If you want the best in online security and privacy protection, head over to expressvpn.com/happyhour for 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Protect your internet today. Go to expressvpn.com/happyhour to get started.
All right, Mia, we also got iOS 13.3 beta this week, and it's kind of a small update, but...
Yeah, it's definitely a smaller one than 13.1 and 13.2 were.
Yeah, they at least include some sort of fixes for things that are problems. One thing is that they changed the icon for the Watch app back to an updated version of the icon that it had. So for a long time, it was the original Apple Watch, which looked like the Apple Watch first generation, Series 1, Series 2, Series 3, and they eventually updated it for the Series 4 because, you know, it's got a little bit different of a crown and design and everything from the side, and it's like the side profile that it shows. And then they changed it in 13.0 to be the old icon again. And I know a listener of ours, I think his name is Nikolai, he was adamant about filing radars and getting feedback on this, and Apple was saying, it's as intended, it's not a bug. You know, we're not going to change it back.
I'm sorry, that was definitely an oversight. Why would they go back to the old design of the Apple Watch?
Right. And so in the 13.3 beta, his feature request is fulfilled. They're now using the Series 4 and now 5 icon again. So very subtle, but if that's a thing that you care about, I did, because I wrote a story when the first time it changed, like, you know, this is old, this is new, and now they use the new one.
And there was no way that was intentional to be reverted. Right. It was just like oversight and a bug or whatever.
He had a good back and forth. Someone messed up. Yeah, he had a good back and forth through feedback, and they closed it as works as intended. I guess they had to change the part. But also you have some new features, like you can now hide your Memoji stickers from the Emoji keyboard, where they put them there because they wanted to, promote Memoji stickers, even though it's an iMessage app too. They wanted to put it next to Emoji, even though they don't work like Emoji. Like, they won't show up in the same way, like in a line. It's like a separate image that it sends. Some people didn't like it being there in front of their emoji. And so now you have an option. The default is still that's there, but you can, through settings, turn that off, right?
Yeah. Yeah, which is fine. And I think it's nice because there definitely were people complaining about it, because emoji are very commonly used and emoji stickers are much less commonly used.
Yeah. So they're not emoji.
I think it's good they're actually listening to customer feedback on that one. Like, I think people like making them emojis and using them as their like profile pictures and stuff, but I don't see it as like a day-to-day conversational thing, and it just got in the way of picking, you know, actual emoji to send off to people.
I've tweeted this before, but my mom and my mother-in-law each have Memoji that look like them. And I just saw over the weekend that my uncle has used one that doesn't look like him, but I can see what he's going for. So they use them in places. Like, my uncle used it on Facebook, and I saw it like on the website. You know, because it's just an image. It's not an emoji. Like, emoji needs a software version to be able to show, but the emoji is just an image, and show it. It showed up there on the web. And with my aunt and my mother-in-law, or with my mom and my mother-in-law, they were close enough to their actual, like, what they look like, that I changed the contact. That's one of the rare instances where I you know, because on Twitter, it's like, the people look the same to me, and whenever they use an emoji, I kind of lose identity of like what they actually look like, because there's so many similarities of people that it's like it just blends together. But knowing someone's face in real life and then seeing their representation through emoji, it works with family at least. And I see them use them all the time, but they're also heavy emoji users too. But that's a good option to have at least, and people were happy. And then there's also some changes to screen time, where they're fulfilling feature promises and adding new ones as well, right?
Yeah, so something that was originally in 13.0 and then got pushed back a bit into late this year is called communication limits, which essentially is the feature where you can tell, you can set for downtime or for uptime what contacts your children are allowed to message in messages. So you could have, during the day, you're allowed to contact anyone, and then when you're supposed to be going to bed or, you know, doing other stuff than being on your phone all day, you could limit messages to only work with, you know, your close family for emergencies, because it'd be too obstructive to disable the message app completely in case someone actually got into trouble and they wanted to contact family or whatever. So now they can say, you can whitelist, you know, mum, dad, cousins and stuff, but then they can't just like text their friends all through the night. That's the idea of the feature.
Mm-hmm.
One little nugget that also popped up is it seems like there's going to be a way for the adult to actually be able to take control of the child's address book, which is interesting and something that I hadn't talked about before. And it makes sense because if you're worried, if you're especially with like younger children who, you know, you're worried about like predators or people being like creepy or whatever, and you just want to get keep tabs on who they actually have in their phone.
It's like a saved contact, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there'll be this feature where you can, you have to approve it on the other device or whatever. So it will take a little while to roll out, but essentially you can take over control of their address book. You can approve new additions to the address book, and you can delete people that look you don't want to be there, etc., etc. So that's a nice little inclusion that they didn't actually talk about before, but I can see that being useful, especially for, you know, younger children.
Yeah, for my own kids' devices, for their iPhone, their iPods and iPads, it is a task to create an entry for every family member that they might use with FaceTime or messages. And so being able to do it remotely helps with that because I don't have to have their device in front of me. And then, you know, I can manage my database and then the contact database and then see theirs as well and update it with one device and not jump in between. So I don't have the betas on their stuff yet, but when it's available, that'll be a cool feature to have. And then maybe one day I'll take advantage of it with like seeing who is in their database. So that's cool. And then this was the first time, I don't think we've mentioned the problem where people were having very bad issues with like RAM management and then apps closing as soon as like in the background, as if you were force quitting them, having to relaunch each time you loaded them, even if you did like multitasking from side to side. You didn't have this problem, right?
Not any more than I did before.
Like, okay.
I think the iPhone 11 Pro ejects apps at will when you use the camera. But
yeah.
But when you're outside the camera app, stuff, I never saw an issue with the background app closing problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you did, right?
I definitely did. And I didn't realize it until people were expressing it. And I'm like, oh, I am definitely seeing that. And the camera, when it's, you know, like you said, it already ejects apps at will. But that got super severe. And at Disney World, I was trying to use low power mode on my iPhone. And that plus the multitasking stuff happening badly, it made it unusable. So I had to turn off low power mode on the iPhone. But using it with CarPlay as like a passenger, it was just too much to ask because it's got this whole CarPlay task at hand. And like everything else, it was very hard to do. Taking a picture, you know, with CarPlay on the screen, like that was not possible. Everything got really hot and slow. And so the 13.3 beta, you know, they don't call it out, but it seemed to address that for people. It was pretty clear when you had one way or the other way. And then just today there was a release called 13.2.2. So not a beta, an actual release for all customers. And that one addresses in the release notes that they fix this problem for people.
Yeah, and I wasn't experiencing it, but it would definitely annoy me to the end of the world if it was. So it's pretty good turnaround time for fixing it because it basically seemed to pop up like the middle of last week, I'd say, mm-hmm. and now it's the middle of the week after, and they've got a fix out. So I'd say it's pretty good turnaround time from Apple yeah. Incorporated.
Yeah, I mean, they did a public beta of 13.3, not just a developer beta, and people were promoting that. It's like, if you want to fix your phone, use this beta. And it's not really like the betas aren't rocky right now because they're what's going to be coming, you know, soon, not in a few months. But it's definitely better to have an official release out, not just a beta to try.
And so when 13.3 does come out, mm-hmm. Apple will have fulfilled its promise of every single feature that they promised WWDC for iOS 13, with the one exception of iCloud folder sharing, which is still planned for the spring now. So it's been pushed back to the spring.
Yeah.
But the communication limits was like the last big one on the big feature list that had an asterisk on it. And it seems like that'll be coming out, you know, end of November timeframe. So they will get that one in just before 2020 starts.
So we'll have a 13.4 and maybe a 13.5. We'll see how we get. We were talking before the show and the thing with the iCloud folder sharing, we're both excited about that because it gives us a place to, like, if we wanted, I guess right now we send audio through Dropbox. You send your audio file to me through Dropbox, and I don't have Dropbox installed on my machines, but I just go to the website and download it. But I do use iCloud Drive because I pay for the 2 terabyte storage plan, and I get a lot of use out of that with photos and other features. And so I think you pay as well. And so we could put our files through that. And as I use it, but I don't need it anymore, I can delete it. And then, you know, you don't have to manage it. I sort of get rid of it when yep. I'm done with it.
Yeah, I'd love to abandon Dropbox at all cost, but yes. It's not possible at the moment.
Yeah. And so we were excited for that, but we were talking before the show and it's kind of like, you know, nothing stops us from continuing to use Dropbox for this limited feature though. So it isn't like last year where there's this big, you know, AirPlay 2 feature that's sort of unmatched otherwise.
Or... Yeah, like AirPlay 2, you couldn't replicate otherwise. So yeah. You were just always waiting for Apple to put it out there so you could do stereo pairs on HomePods and multi-room and stuff like that.
Yeah.
With iCloud photo sharing, at the end of the day, everyone just keeps on using Dropbox until it comes out. That's basically what's happening.
Yeah. And there's also the ability to do shared folders and notes, which is actually here. So we've been using that for a few weeks and we really like that.
Yeah, and it works great for us. So mm-hmm. I'm very
yeah.
happy.
Yeah. So once the you know, and you don't want them to do a half-baked version of folder sharing. That would not be good. So we'll wait for that in the spring. But they're doing better this year than last year on that part, even if they've had a rocky release with frequently update releases. Speaking of releases, let's talk about Apple TV Plus, Mayo. This has been one of your big focuses over the last several months as we've been covering this. This week, as we speak, we have a product to talk about, Apple TV Plus, the actual video service. So what are your high-level thoughts at first?
Yeah, so Apple TV Plus launched on Friday. It essentially debuted exactly as everyone expected it to. It was offered as another channel inside the TV app, and then they gave it some promotion with like a big like full screen feature of like carousel. You can swipe through and see the big shows.
I think that there's the one surprise is that there's annual pricing.
Yes,
which we didn't know about.
Yeah. So we knew it was $4.99 a month, but what we didn't know is they are actually also offering $49.99 a year. So you basically get 2 months free if you pay for a year. Mm-hmm. So I switched to the yearly plan, but obviously nobody's paying anything at the moment because we're on the free trial until September 2020.
Yeah, if you purchased a new iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple TV, those devices, then you
or iPod Touch
or iPod Touch. Yeah, I forget about those guys,
which no one's buying. But yeah.
I mean, I bought a couple for my kids, but not recently. so then you get the year. Otherwise, you get the 1 week free trial, right?
Yeah,
yeah. But that's compelling. I mean, like you, I also switched what I will pay whenever the trial is up to be the, you know, obviously you can change it before the year is up and then you can say, I don't want to renew at all. But if you're going to renew and you think you like it, then paying for a year and saving some money is compelling. And I think I'll do the same thing for Disney Plus when that launches.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And obviously they did their classic advertising with push notifications. And there was some weirdness at the start where some people couldn't redeem their free year, even though they'd actually bought an eligible device. They had to contact Apple support and they had to work around it. And then there were some other people who said that they swore blind that they never bought an Apple device recently, and yet they did get a free year. So there was some people got lucky and some people got unlucky, but it seems like Apple's sorting most of that out at this point. Overall, it was a pretty decent launch for them. There wasn't any weirdness in terms of, you know, like server downtime. I didn't experience any glitches with the service. I have a, you know, laundry list of problems with the TV app, but yeah, that's kind of separate to, you know, just TV Plus on its own. It worked fine for me. I could watch whatever I wanted as soon as it went live. I've been watching it on my phone. I've been watching it on the living room Apple TV. But we don't know yet. Apple at least hasn't released any information about adoption or uptake. So maybe it could have been a big flop and nobody did it, but it seems like, just, you know, like feeling on the grapevine, looking at Twitter and stuff like that, that at least people are redeeming their free years and you know, actually watching the stuff they can watch for free.
Yeah. My experience with doing the free trial for the year, you know, because we've bought a new iPhone recently, is that on the morning at lunch, it was like 5:30 a.m. We were all awake in the home. The dogs had woken us up and was getting the kids ready for school. And so it's like, oh, TV Plus is out. Let me try Helpsters. It's like the TV show that we watch in the morning while we're getting ready. And so I went to the TV app. I think it like popped up, you know, do your trial. And I clicked through there and it was nice because it isn't the device that I bought it on, but it is my account. and I put on Helpsters, and you know, I sent you a picture, and it was my son Rory watching Helpsters like in the morning at 5:30 a.m. and he was very engaged with it. And there's a lot of music and like fast paced energy throughout it. And that's like the show from Sesame Street Workshop. So it's the Elmo like universe, but not Elmo. And before we knew it, we were through three episodes. So it was a hit. And as much as, you know, a show like that can be, I've also spent some time trying shows for myself. So the big thing is For All Mankind is like right up my alley in terms of like a space drama. And so I've wanted to save that for when there are no distractions and I can, like, you know, it's TV time, you know, and I can watch it on my living room TV. The show that I thought I would like the least is C, because I'm not like, I've not watched Game of Thrones, and that genre of show never appeals to me, and I don't even try it. So, I started with C as like the non-kid show for me to watch first, so I can just get through it and then have an opinion. And I actually, like, through the first episode, I was very engaged with it, and I wanted to see the next episode. And I had to end watching the second episode like halfway through, and I couldn't wait to have free time to watch it, the rest of it, and then the last episode. And so that was part of my Disney experience over the weekend. Was part of Disney is you're in like hour long lines. And so I had AirPods Pro and I had my iPhone, and I would like watch episodes of C with noise cancellation. It was really nice. And that's one show.
Do you have unlimited 4G data plan?
No, I didn't think of that. Well, no, I've got unlimited, but it's like 22 gigabytes.
Yeah, because that's one of the complaints that has arisen is that, well, it's kind of a good and a bad thing. Like, mm-hmm. The Apple TV Plus streams are really, really high bit rate and high quality.
Yeah.
But that also means they're very big files, and some people are already asking for, you know, a low data mode option, so that if they are watching on mobile data on the road, they don't, you know, consume gigabytes per hour of content.
Yeah, there is Wi-Fi at Disney, so that would have worked fine, but yeah. I wasn't even using that. I was just using data. But yeah, it was quite enjoyable, and the whole thing was like, I used to never even consider, like, I would never like buy a movie and watch it on the iPhone. But this stuff is sort of experimental for me. That isn't like a show that I know I love. I'm just trying it out, as, you know, in part for the podcast and for 9to5 Mac and as Apple's new service. But as like a side note, I really enjoyed watching episodes of TV shows on the iPad Pro and on the iPhone. Well, you know, it was really cool, actually. And like with the AirPods, it really helped. So I got through all of C, and that's one show where I immediately wondered, like, oh, when does the new episode come out? And like had to think about it. Oh, it's Friday, you know, and then there'll be one a week for there. The next show I watched with my wife is Dickinson. And because it's like I started watching it on my own. And I was like, oh, I think she'll like this show too. So we should watch it together. And so we did. And you know, that one, like, it didn't grab me, but it kind of reminds me of I've never seen Hamilton, you know, the play, but it kind of reminds me of that approach where you take something historical and maybe kind of boring, and you try and like tell that story through modern, you know, ways with modern.
Yeah,
music.
And it has a lot of jokes in it, and
yeah, exactly. So it reminds me of that, but as a TV show, even though I've never seen the play, but as a TV show. And the only thing I can say about that is that the fact that you're tied to what actually happened as we know it, you know, you've kind of got to work with the historical plot points to tell the story, even if you might not make those decisions in a TV show. And so that can be tricky. I think there are things that are included that you wouldn't imagine as part of the story if you were just making a show with this concept. But because they're important historically, you can't ignore them. You've got to incorporate them. So I think it's a bit of a challenge, but we will continue watching Dickinson together. I think that's part of what helps is that we're watching it together. But I think I'm three or four in there, and I was happy to see that that's only half an hour. But then I was less happy to see that all the episodes are out, so there's nothing stopping me from finishing them. I managed to get to one episode of The Morning Show, and that was one that we watched together as well. And that's more like the show that I'm used to, like, what I want to see and, like, you know, gravitate toward. And I haven't seen the second or third episode yet, just because we're watching that together as well. But that's a show that, with just the first episode, I found that it was easy to digest for me. And like with C, there were times when I was watching it at Disney and had to like shield my eyes at what I was seeing, like, you know, gruesome battles and stuff. But with the morning show, like, I watched all of Newsroom when that was a show, and sort of it's not hard to watch. And it's, you know, one thing about it that I really enjoyed, I don't know if I mentioned to you, was that whenever you see Jennifer Aniston's character's home, I enjoyed like how nice her home looked and like looking around it. So I will do good with the home show whenever that comes out.
The home documentary, they just look at rich people's houses.
Yeah. But just like kind of just seeing that environment and everything, I was relaxed and viewing that show, and I want to watch more, and I will. But I've not seen any of For All Mankind yet, and that's the one that's like most on brand with me, I think, in terms of like interest and stuff. So I'll get to it. What about you?
It's kind of funny, like the shows you like the most, which is C, although you might actually like For All Mankind the most if you actually watch it. That is the one that I'm least attached to, and that was definitely the one that got the worst critical reception last week, which we obviously mentioned. I think for the most part, the critics' reviews were way overblown, and like the TV Plus slate is not as bad as what those reviews last week made it out to be by any means.
Yeah.
With C, I can understand why it got, you know, laughed at essentially, because it's a hard concept to like accept in that everyone's blind. And what I found is that whilst I was watching it, whilst the, you know, the scenery is epic and the fights are really cool, it would just nag in my head, like, you know, could a blind people actually do this? And could, is this realistic? Like, and at some points it feels like they address the blindness and ability kind of question really well, you know, where they have like sticks on the floor, they're tapping around, or they're throwing rocks out in front of them. So
they describe what they're hearing and how they're acknowledging that people are there that they can't see.
Yeah. And then there's other moments where it's like they forget that they're meant to be blind, in my opinion. And then they just have like a battle as if everyone can see, which kind of like ruins it a bit. And it's like, then it just kind of seems like a bit of a carnival rather than like a serious show. That in episode three, there's a really cool fight sequence with Jason Momoa's character. And part of the fight sequence, it involves him just like throwing his sword through the air.
Yeah.
And it just so happens to perfectly hit the other guy on the head and knock him out. And it's like, you know, if you could see, I'd be like, that's really cool and possible. But when you're blind, you're not meant to be able to do that kind of thing. But, and then aside from that, I also have some like reservations about how well the plot is going to be realized. Like, it kind of feels like a show where, for me, where it's cool to watch, but there isn't like a hardline story with
like, why is this happening, why are you showing this,
or an integrated narrative of like really motivating everything. It's kind of just going flying by like the seat of its pants, like, let's go here, oh, let's do something really cool, oh, it's really convenient this guy showed up, so now we can have a battle over here. That's how my impression of it is from the first three episodes, at least.
Didn't you say that the second episode was like the least well reviewed because some people said nothing happened in that?
Yeah.
And then my interpretation of that, like just from viewing it and not reading those reviews, was that the first episode set up a lot of story, but then there was a lot of questions. And
Even by the end of watching episode three, there's still a lot of stuff where it's like, why is this happening?
Yeah. Right? And hopefully, you know, surely they didn't know.
If you get the payoff, it'll be better, right?
Sure,
but at the moment, you're just kind of in this limbo where it's like, is everything just like a, you know, they're just playing, they're just making up a story as they go along, or is there actually going to be something to tie this all together?
Yeah. I found that episode two, if you watch it right after one, then they go well together, because it's like we're further building out this world and giving you reasons for what's going on. And then by episode three, things start to progress pretty fast. But also by that fast progression, it makes me wonder like how often will we jump through time and things, you know? And so we'll see how that goes. But
yeah,
just in terms of like the concept, I found that the vision thing, you know, was like it added a serious layer of suspense for me, reminding me of the, I think of the movie, the, I think the movie's called Quiet Places, or The Quiet Place?
Yeah, Quiet Place, yeah. John Krasinski film. That was a pretty good film.
Yeah, with Jim from The Office. And the whole thing there is like, you can't make sound, noise, or monsters will grab you, eat you. And there's a newborn baby, you know, so it's problematic. It's hard to manage that way. But that same thing where like the noise was what you were afraid of because you knew what would happen. In this case, you know, not having vision adds a layer of suspense that you wouldn't have otherwise, because you can see where they are, but they cannot. And so, like, don't step over that waterfall or you'll die, you know, kind of thing. So that added some suspense to me. Which I think is quite effective. And then the whole thing, we had a conversation offline where it was like, well, how are they able to do these things, you know, even, you know, when they're blind? And my perception was that they at least acknowledged through storytelling that they're what, 600 years in.
Mm-hmm.
And so by that many generations, you've adapted to being this way. And, you know, they also show that some people have heightened senses in different ways and can perceive.
Yeah, there's a few people in like the tribe that have very clearly defined like special abilities.
Yeah.
The others don't. And then right. You just have the baseline of you can't see, but you've adapted over 600 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're in like their base, just living around at home, it's like, and they're walking around like perfectly. It's like you get that, right? Because they've lived there for a long time.
Yeah.
And they're fine. Then you go, they're like, you know, treading through forests they've never been, the parts of the forest they've never been to before. And sometimes they do a really good job of like checking ahead of themselves. And then other times they're just kind of like walking forward and they never hit into each other. And by the end of episode 3, we haven't had a situation where like Jason Momoa accidentally chops the head off of one of his friends, which I kind of thought was maybe what they were going to do.
Oh, did he? I didn't pick up that.
No, that didn't happen.
Oh, it didn't happen. That's what I mean. Okay. Like, you thought it would have happened. Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought one of the like their twists was going to be, was like nobody can see. So when they're doing these big fight scenes, they're going to show the risk of it by like killing someone by like friendly fire. There's like no friendly fire in the entire show, which I think is, you know, maybe a bit unrealistic. But anyway, I'm definitely going to watch it through the end of the season, but I would put it last on my ranking of the big four.
And there are only 8 episodes in the season, so it won't take long to get through, even if they're an hour long.
Yeah. One thing that is funny about C is like, it's the perfect show to show somebody to disprove all of the family-friendly rumors.
All of them are, except for the kids' shows. Like, there's sexual content in Dickinson. There's foul language in The Morning Show. I don't know about For All Mankind yet, but none of these shows...
Yeah, that has swearing in it. It doesn't have much of anything else, at least in the first 3, but it has swearing.
But if I was, like, a 12-year-old boy, I wouldn't watch it in front of my pit with my parents. Like, you know.
Yeah, especially C. C's got some questionable scenes in it at points.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then like the fight scenes are really, really cool, but they definitely don't shy away from showing like dismembered bodies or blood or gore. Like,
there's a thing that,
you know, if you want to come into Apple TV Plus complaining that Apple's going to, you know, control it and make it sanitize it down, then that's definitely not the case. In some cases, you could almost criticize them for going too over the top on some of those things. Like, mm-hmm. I think with The Morning Show, there's maybe too much swearing. Especially in the first episode where it's like everyone's just shouting and everyone's swearing. It's like, you know, just chill out a little bit.
Yeah. On C, to my point about how lack of vision adds suspense is like a whole, like it's almost like a character in the show that you're worried about. The bridge scene wouldn't be possible without that concept, right? Like that would just be a boring walk through the woods.
Yeah.
But because of the whole premise of the show, it becomes a very drawn out experience and one that has, you know, great suspense to it. Like, I guess you could say this is a rocky bridge and hope we can cross it, but that isn't what's happening. It's much more than that. So, yep. It's interesting. I mean, we watched the same content and we had like different perspectives on what happened and like what it means and what we can talk about.
Yeah. So. Just to round out the set, Dickinson, I think, is a good show,
mm-hmm.
But it's not really like my interest area. So I did watch the whole thing, but I kind of like did other stuff while I was doing it. I wasn't captivated to watch every single minute of it, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And some of the criticism early on was like, it's tonally confused was a bigger the quotes because it blends so much of modern day with the past and the history, and it has modern day music. None of that stuff bothered me at all. I got the, you know, I got the gist of it. It was perfectly fine in my book on that regard. For All Mankind is really good, but it is a bit. For All Mankind is one of those shows where you hope there's a big payoff coming, otherwise it's going to be like very drawn out, I think. Like, it is slow to build up, but I do like it. But it's, you know, by the end of episode 3 and still, you know, nothing major's happened. The concept's really good, and I'm hoping, you know, through the rest of the season, they like actually, you know, start making like, they start doing stuff that is more sci-fi. Because at the moment, it's, you know, replaying history, but in a bit of a different order. And so it will be a really, really good show if and when they start diverging from the timeline to the point where they're doing stuff in the show that we don't even do today. Like, you know, setting up a base on the moon or going beyond the moon and stuff like that. And as long as it goes in that direction, it'll be really, really good. And I think if you're, you know, a big fan of NASA and the space race and stuff, you're going to love it regardless. For me, I'm not, I like, you know, I like space and I think it's rockets, but, you know, my name's not Apollo Zach, for example. But I still enjoyed it, and it was really, really good, I thought. And I was definitely ready to watch the next episode. And I'd say the same with The Morning Show. Is it the best TV show in the entire world? Probably not at the moment, but it is really good, in my opinion. The first episode is very rough. I just feel like there's so much shouting, it just kind of like puts you off. And it's you don't get much like texture from the characters because everyone's just having a screaming match with everybody else. And I was like, is this really what this whole thing's going to be? But episode 2 is much better in terms of, you know, actually having proper conversations, and you start getting the power dynamics of everyone involved. And then the cliffhanger at the end of episode 2 is really, really good. And that like propelled me to watch the final hour of episode 3.
Nice.
And now I'm like on the train. I'm like, come on, where's the next episode coming out? So it was definitely first episode, shaky. But now it feels like, yeah, this is actually why this is Apple's, you know, headline show, essentially. By the end of episode 3, I was like, yeah, I get this. This is on it. And maybe it's not as good as The Newsroom, but the reality is, The Newsroom isn't on anymore, and it was last on like 10 years ago, and they're bringing it into modern themes, especially regarding sexual misconduct. And I really like the bits where they kind of address the perspective of Mitch Kessler, i.e., Steve Carell's character, of the accused, of the person who's been accused. And of course, they're not like saying that what he did or what the character did was good, but you don't really see much exposition of like what it's like to be accused in that way. And there's stuff like, there is like open questions about like, should you use your job immediately when you're just accused of something and you're not that proven guilty of it, right? And those kind of questions, and that, like, you know, my life is ruined already and I've not even been convicted yet. Like, that kind of stuff is what they bring up in this show, along with, you know, a lot of other topics as well. And that's really interesting to me. I think it's clever.
Yep. I will give a disclaimer for the space content. I often do find space movies kind of boring and hard to get through because there's only so much you can do in space, and you've got to have a really good story to make it worth your time. Otherwise, it's like, here's a visual. Hope you enjoy. And it's like, that could be a risk with For All Mankind. For All Mankind. So we'll see how it plays out for me. With The Morning Show, like, I enjoyed Newsroom when it was brand new, but like, I don't think it aged as well. I mean, things have changed so much that it's almost like it's similar to, what's the show from the same director, around Washington DC. Anyway, it looks so naive now compared to like then, because it was so at such a different time that now all of it looks like comically tame and like toned down compared to what reality, because reality is much crazier than what's shown on screen. So, like, you know, it looks like an optimistic world instead. So, but we get to experience these over the next few weeks. And so we'll see who starts to drop off of what shows when, and if that actually happens. So
Overall.
The West Wing is what I was thinking of.
A decent debut, right? They haven't, I don't think they've got their AAA runaway hit just yet, but there's 4 decent shows there. Even the one I like the least, I don't hate it to pieces. I think they're all very respectable offerings. And would I pay $4.99 a month for this service at the moment? No. But I think there's a decent roadmap where in a year's time, it will be substantive.
Yeah, I'll pay for anything, so it's hard to judge. But, and you can pay and then cancel and come back into it later on. And but I did think about it from the perspective of, I'm enjoying C. I think my mom would enjoy C, and like my stepdad. But I don't think that they should pay $5 a month for this. And they don't have, you know, they haven't bought anything new. So what I've thought about doing is buying them a new Apple TV, because it's like, what is that, the cheapest thing you can get? And you can probably get a deal on one, you know, with the holidays. So then buy that, not for the Apple TV, even though they can use it, but for the year free trial. I guess the other thing I could do is like just pay for a year for them.
You could give them $60, yeah.
Yeah.
Or you give them $50.
But that feels like less tangible. And so like, here's a new Apple TV and try this new service on it.
I think it's off to a good start. And I'm especially, the roadmap so far they've got is very good. Obviously, they've got Servant coming up at the end of this month, and they've got Truth Be Told and Hala, and then the banker film they like previewed as well.
Again, a movie, right?
Yeah. Sorry?
It will be in theaters, right?
Yeah. So technically, The 11th Queen was in theaters as well, but it was in for like a week and a half, so it didn't really count. Hala is in theaters from November 22nd, and it comes out on December 6th. Mm-hmm. So again, it's like, basically, you know, because the movies have to be in theaters for a period to qualify for awards. And, you know, Apple's trying to get Oscars and they're trying to get awards recognition, and they have to play friendly with the movie theaters. The Bankers, definitely their like biggest budget movie so far. And, it, you know, it's got like Samuel L. Jackson in it and Anthony Mackay. And that one's going into theaters on the 6th of December. And it won't be out on Apple TV Plus until the end of January, I think. So they're definitely giving that one a longer run, because I think they know that that's one where it could actually get at least being nominated for, you know, tangible awards. So they're definitely trying to put a lot of eggs in their basket behind that one.
Yeah, it's a new thing from Apple. It's for sure to see like Apple original on a film and things. So cool. Well, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you have any feedback, you can email us at happyhour@n5mac.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ApolloZac. That's APOLLOZAC. And Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZAMayo.
All right. We'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.